The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
It's a good day on many fronts because of the gradual easing of restrictions. I hope people don't lose the run of themselves entirely. But aviation is still kind of long-fingered, but we can't do without aviation.
No, let me give you a few statistics which I just looked up over the weekend. In 2019, Dublin Airport had 190 destinations with 50 airlines, and it handled 33 million passengers. So it's a huge engine that drives not just north of Dublin, but all of our country. Now, the figures this year, 2021, will be tiny, a very small proportion of that. Don't forget either that if you went to the airport today, if you could get through the Garda checkpoint, you wouldn't be let into the airport to say goodbye or to greet people coming in if there are small numbers there, you know. So I hope that is removed as the summer goes on, because I think meeting and greeting is very important in the airport context. But more than that, if you look at the website, I didn't realise this, or I'd forgotten, on Friday last there were 72 countries from which passengers are required to hotel quarantine. 72. Seven have been removed over the weekend, if I got the figures right, and two more added. I'm not sure if the two include India, which I think comes into vogue next Thursday. So the situation is still very fluid in aviation, and we're not there yet, so to speak.
Yeah, the quarantine, the whole idea was to deter people. If you know it's going to cost you a couple of grand to quarantine, you kind of think twice before you come into the country, unless your visit is absolutely vital. And I presume that has worked.
Oh, it's worked very well indeed. It's just not on the radar at all now. And yet, we contrast that with our situation across the water in the UK, where I saw Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying people are free to travel to certain countries from next Monday. So they've got a different attitude to travel, I think, although some places to which they're going are on the green and amber list. So they'll be needing, you know, certain cases in terms of quarantining. I'm not sure if they have to do it. But if you came into the UK this morning, you'd have to quarantine at in a hotel for a fortnight. That's a huge disincentive when the airlines themselves are bursting to fly. I keep getting emails, I told you before, fly to Dubai for this price. Go to Barbados for £150 each way. That's a knockdown price. Go to Boston, you know. It doesn't say when now, or if I got there, would they let me in? But things are moving in different parts of the world at different speeds, and we have to take this into account in aviation terms.
Now, talk to me about the health travel passport that the EU is talking about, but also the IATA travel pass.
Yeah, the IATA one has been in business now for more than 6-8 months, indeed. They've been speaking about it. IATA, just in passing, is headed up by our own Dr. Willie Walsh, whom you've had on the radio programme before. He was with Aer Lingus, British Airways and the IAG, and is now Secretary General of IATA. So they're quite good in moving forward. I've done some of their courses. They're very progressive. They're not just the union for the airlines. And they have a document out. It's a brilliant app which says you could have all your information in one place on your smartphone, for example, which would tell you about proof of vaccination. It would give you the right to travel. It would tell the government authorities about your passport and visa situation and so forth. So they're trialing that. They've done so from March on the Singapore Airlines London Singapore route, and it worked very well. And the app is available for free with effect from next week. And indeed, 30 airlines are testing the app. So they're a little bit ahead of the EU because, of course, IATA deals in worldwide matters, not just the European Union. And I think this is going to be the future for us.
Yeah. So any of us can download the app. How does it interface, though, with your vaccine credibility, you know, whether or not?
That's the problem, Pat, you see. I got my first vaccination 9 days ago, and I was very pleased to have it. I've got a piece of paper which says I've got one. I'm going to stick it in my passport. Will that be uploaded then in any real sense to a central location where we could have access to it, you see? If not, in fairness to IATA, they said some of this information may have to be carried in paper format because there are older people or those who don't have access in certain parts of the world to your smartphone and such like. So paper, my concern about paper has always been you want to get away from the counter documents, you know, where you could buy it down the corner for 20 quid or whatever it might be. So the future is having all this in one place, and the shape of travel through the airport is going to be a little bit different.
Now, British holidaymakers will be heading off. There's no question about that.
Yes. And they've got, just in the last 45 minutes, I got an email telling me that an airport called Doncaster Sheffield, I honestly can't remember if I've been in Doncaster or Sheffield, but it's an airport, they are subsidising the testing they require if they haven't got vaccinated, to go to some of these green or amber destinations, depending on the Foreign Office in London, which decides these things, because, of course, they're not in the European Union now, although most of the destinations are still in the EU, places like Greece and Portugal and Malta, places the British would typically go on holidays to. They're really keen to go. The green antigen test is being subsidised. It'll cost you £20. You wait 45 minutes to get it. And if you're going to an amber destination, and I find this even more strange, it's going to cost you £50. So I don't see why there should be a difference in testing. But it's being subsidised by TUI, the holiday company. So that's very positive if you're living in that part of the world, and you can be sure more airports will do this. They really want to get people back in because they've been closed for so long.
And they are embracing antigen testing rather than the PCR, which takes longer to turn round. The antigen test being, you know, the half an hour job means you're not infectious. If you go negative on the antigen test, means even if you had some COVID lurking, you're not infectious to anyone at that point if you're negative.
The testing in Dublin Airport, should you have to go there, will cost you, I think, €49 in one location for an antigen test, or you can have a PCR test for either €89 or €149, but I think you need 24 hours to get the results back for that. So it's a bit of a complication. It's a disincentive. And if you had family members going, I mean, why would you do it? It could double or triple the price of the particular flight you're going on. So it's quite a disincentive, and it works very well from that point of view.
Now, how do you think airports and airlines are going to change their operations going forward?
Well, there's two things I need to say first. It's not going to happen in a hurry, because I mentioned this before. We have in aviation things called perishable skills. We need people to move on and be re-rated and recertified to load the aircraft, to maintain them, to do air traffic control systems, to do pre-flight maintenance. And, of course, we have baggage handlers, check-in staff, cabin crew, and, of course, the pilots themselves. And you can't switch them on like a tap very quickly. They need time to build up. And it's best if that is done slowly, so that by the end of the autumn, maybe, or whenever on Taoiseach says so, you know, we'll be flying in a much more solid manner. We'll have numbers up and running. But airports will be different. I'm hoping the meters and greeters can go into the airport and, you know, check your granny out at, you know, the check-in desk, that kind of thing. But even the check-in system will change. It will go to a barcode reading on your phone or a piece of paper. You probably would drop the bag yourself. That was coming in a year and a half ago. In any case, you'd have these little machines. You drop the bag yourself. Security, they won't touch your bag probably now. You'll put it on yourself. You'll take it out. So there's a non-touch policy. I'm not sure how they're going to check the system for your medical certification, and we hope the EU moves forward on that and gives us a system that is EU-wide, that we have a barcode or whatever says, yes, this person is clear of the disease, either by testing or, in my case, hopefully we'll have the full vaccination. You won't have to get tested, surely, if you've been fully vaccinated or you've had the disease in the previous 6 months. Somebody somewhere should have a certification system in place such that we can prove that you have what you have. And then you go through the system in the passport control in the normal way, I presume. But it'll be non-touch. In the airports themselves, just in passing, we're using 2 metres in the shops. I'll go shopping in a short while. It'll be 2 metres. We all get used to wearing masks, so it's not a big deal in the airports, I don't think. ICAO suggested over a year and a half ago that the distance should be 1.5 metres in the airport terminal. So if they embrace that, it doesn't really matter. But they will have spatial places. It'll be different than squeezing 150 people into a small space. We can't do that then. We'll have to have good air conditioning, good ventilation. Aircraft itself, flying doesn't worry me too much, because probably you're going to wear your mask. Maybe they'll let you take it off for a few minutes to have a drink or a cup of coffee or whatever it might be. Not quite sure how that's going to work out. The staff themselves on board will be quite like what you see in a hospital. They will have PPE of various grades, depending on the duration of the flight and so forth. So there'll be no crowding, no rushing. It'll be done in a very measured place, because, of course, we can't afford to have any more of the disease imported into our country, nor do we want to export it to another place. So it'll be a little bit different, but we're so used to it now, it'll work well, I think.
Yeah, we'll be looking at other countries opening up. Now, we know that the United States has a problem reaching herd immunity, because there are so many people who simply won't get vaccinated. But we're told by Governor Cuomo that Broadway will be reopening in full with full audiences come September.
And that was a very strange thing. It says the only thing you'll have to do is wear a mask in the place itself, but they'll not have social distancing. That'll be gone. That must mean then that in the federal state, the federal states of the USA, they'll be allowing foreign people to come in who are provable in terms of disease-free conditions. They'll have either vaccinations or certifications or whatever. So that travel should recommence. As it is now, about one third of the previous COVID flying is taking place in the states. So there's a lot of travel between states as it is like that. And if they can get the herd immunity generally in, it will go very well. If they can't, they could have hotspots in that regard. We've got Asia in, you know, you wouldn't go near India then, and the Indian subcontinent. That'll include places like, you know, I think Sri Lanka and Bangladesh and Pakistan even. The disease doesn't recognize borders, as has been said by Luke O'Neill more than once. So that'll have to be, you know, squeezed. That's a place you'll have to avoid. And I think we can't, you know, accept that clearly. Australia, New Zealand, they allow flights between each other if people are certified in that regard, but they don't open yet. And I'm hoping they will, but I don't think they'll be open as a destination, Australia or New Zealand, until perhaps early in 2022. So that's quite a distance away yet.
Finally, sustainability is the big buzzword. Hard to see. You know, air travel being sustainable unless they can find some alternative to burning carbon. What's on the cards?
Well, there have been experiments, I suppose, going back longer than I had thought when I researched this. We've used aviation fuel for years now in jet aircraft for a whole host of reasons, but basically it's got a very good calorific value. In other words, the energy density is very good for flights. We can handle the fuel, we know where it comes from, we know what it costs, and we can measure it. And the new engines, of course, are remarkably efficient in terms of what they do, and they give less carbon emissions than they had done so before. But really, if we're going to have, by 2030, you know, billions of people flying, and it will come back, flying will come back, make no mistake about that, we have to have something that we can do by way of replacement fuel. And they started this about 5 years ago, more than 5 years ago indeed, and it's called sustainable aviation fuel. And it's made out of stuff like waste wood, energy crops, including fast-growing plants and algae, which surprised me. And the leaders may be Air BP. They're making fuel from used cooking oil and animal fat waste, which is a strange thing you would think. But it works very well because they reduce the carbon emission by up to 80% in the life cycle of the fuel compared to your traditional jet fuel. And more than that, it can be blended 50% with traditional jet fuel. So you have basically kerosene, what we would call Jet A or Jet A1. It handles in exactly the same way and gives the same result, but it doesn't come from the ground. So it is sustainable from that point of view. And Ryanair recently went into Trinity College and did a nice research deal with them. So they're going to pay for €1.5 million worth of research to power their aircraft fleet, which would be very big by 2030. They want 12.5% to be fueled by sustainable aviation fuel by that time. That's only 9 years away. And International Airlines Group will power 10% of their fleets by sustainable fuels by 2030. So it's a thing of the future. It will save us a lot of carbon deposits into the sky.
Finally, Kevin, a question from one of our listeners, Niall. What are our airlines doing to get their pilots and crews up to speed for a return? Some pilots more than a year out of the air.
Yes.
Will need to get back into simulators, and yes, they and cabin crew go through SEP programs to activate renewal of their licenses. It needs to be planned to enable a smooth return. That's from Niall.
Absolutely. And that's one of the serious problems. As I said, it's perishable, so you lose your license, you lose your ratings, you have to fly. That's why aviation is so safe, and I think it's going to remain safe because they're going to keep a good eye on it. You have to book a simulator. Simulators all over the world, there's only so many of them. They're booked out months in advance, so it'll be a slow process, but they will get there. So we don't turn on every flight on the same week. We do it progressively, such that the crews get rostered in the same way, and they will do the minimum time required to bring them back into vogue, so to speak. They get rated, they get their certifications back, and I have every confidence that this will happen throughout aviation. So the pilots will go into simulators, then they'll fly the real aircraft, then they get certified in the normal way, and we'll be hunky-dory by whatever time we can get back into the aircraft and fly as passengers again, hopefully by maybe August or September.
Yeah. And of course, many pilots have been flying cargo, so not every pilot has been grounded, shall we say. All right, Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel from the Air Corps and working as an airport safety and security auditor. Kevin, thank you very much. Now,